This is Vatican Radio. I'm Linda Bordoni. Freedom Day on April the 27th is a national public holiday in South Africa, commemorating the country's first democratic post-apartheid elections that were held in 1994. The holiday also pays tribute to South Africa's unique and remarkably detailed and inclusive constitution, which includes a Bill of Rights that is widely recognised as one of the most developed charters in the world and guarantees all those within South African borders the freedom from the hatred and oppression that rule the past. However, as Archbishop William Slattery of Pretoria says, shadows still lurk. He speaks of the state of the country on the 20th anniversary from that first historic election in 1994, just days before the nation goes to the polls for a presidential vote on May the 7th.
This is 20 years of democracy that we have enjoyed since 1994, 2014. So participating in this election for the first time are a group of people known as the Born Frees. That is, those born in 1994 or since. They are participating for the first time in this election. It is an election that, you know, undoubtedly the African National Congress, the ruling party, will win. I mean, they're coming in with a parliament of 65%. And there's no way, I think, that by which they will lose that majority, that's for certain. But, you know, at the moment, while political independence has been achieved in South Africa, economic justice for all has not yet been adequately received. Now, the President, President Zuma, in his addresses to Parliament and in his speeches around the country on behalf of his ruling party, the ANC, he says repeatedly, we have a good story to tell. Because, certainly, yes, there have been a tremendous amelioration, improvement in the life of the people of South Africa, especially the majority of African people who were the butt of apartheid for, we could say, centuries, really, even though as a legal system, perhaps it was just 50, 55 years old. But before that, there was legal segregation for many, many years. So certainly, for the majority of people, life has improved. Education is for all now and compulsory. Health services have improved. You know, African leadership is evident in all aspects of life. So that is a tremendous improvement. Our relationships, church and state, are quite free. We are free, totally free, to exercise our ministry. South Africa has a peculiar situation in that there are 6,000 independent churches in South Africa. Now, we may be the biggest individual church, but even at that, we're just 6.5% of the population. Now, we have made a fantastic contribution to South Africa. In 1955, 55 of the hospitals, major hospitals in South Africa, were Catholic hospitals. Today, there's one. We educated, at that time, 20% of the African people of South Africa, especially in rural areas. Today, you know, the government has more or less taken over education. So we have good relations with the government. We thank them for what they have done. But at the same time, you were asking about the social conditions in South Africa at the moment. I would say that there is still large inequality. This is a major problem. And especially the youth are experiencing that. A lot of dissatisfaction in our country. So inequality is the country with the biggest Gini coefficient in the world. That is the difference in wealth and income between the rich, mainly white, and the African majority, still mainly black. We have still a lot of healing to do from apartheid. Apartheid still echoes, you know, in life in South Africa. I think white people in South Africa have a lot of learning to do. Learning in the sense of the heart learning. You know, they pay lip service to the terrible reality that was apartheid, which they voted for centuries. But I don't know if they really feel in their hearts the suffering that the majority of people felt. I do think they have a lot of learning to do here. Learning in the sense of the heart learning. You know, they pay lip service to the terrible reality that was apartheid, which they voted for centuries. But I don't know if they really feel in their hearts the suffering that the majority of people felt. I do think they have a lot of learning to do here. We, like every other country in the world, we're filled with phone-in radio stations. The media is very active. The social media are very active. So if you listen to what the white people are saying, they're saying, okay, there was mistakes made in the past, but now things are better than ever. Why is this government not doing that? Why are African people not being more entrepreneurial? And so on like that. But I mean, to be entrepreneurial, you need to have confidence, you need to have economics, you need to have legal facilities, and it'll take another generation to achieve these. But there are emerging an educated, bright young African class. Another thing I would say is that in the 20 years of democracy, it is a minority of the black leadership which has benefited rather than the majority. This is a problem. There is a problem with corruption in South Africa. We're talking about billions, 30, 40 billion a year of US dollars goes in corruption. And a lot of that is within the party. Race is still an issue in South Africa, even though in ordinary social human relationships, there is ease. People relate relatively easily and fairly naturally with each other. But remember, apartheid was geographic. Now that's breaking down as African people move into the cities, move into the fine houses, move into leadership in all aspects of life. It is breaking down, but still race is at the back of people's minds. And this now, for the rest of Africa and the rest of the world, maybe evidence itself in certain expressions of xenophobia, which have been expressed in South Africa. Now, yes, it's easy to condemn that, and it should be condemned, of course, and the church does all in its power to accept people who come. Because South Africa today, in the minds of many African people in other African countries, is what the United States and Canada were for European people in the 19th and part of the 20th century. It's a mecca, it's a place of opportunity. And so people are coming in big numbers. Now, the government is not controlling that. And so these people have initiative. Often they have better education than our local people. And so they're finding jobs, you know, and they're opening enterprises that are being successful. And local poor, hungry people are going to be very angry with this. And so it expresses itself in xenophobia. Shouldn't happen, but when you see the situations, the poverty, inequality that people experience every day, you can understand that. So this is South Africa today. I'm very hopeful, but certainly the youth have to be catered for, because not only are they unemployed, but many are unemployable. The education system, while improving, has not adequately improved. For example, at the end of high school, you know, you can pass many subjects with just 30%. That leaves you totally, you know, incapacitated if you want to go to university and things like that. Now, the church has made certain statements recently as regards the elections. We're telling all our people, we're echoing Pope Francis, we're echoing Pope Benedict, we're echoing human rights. We're saying, get out there and vote. Take a part in the election. Now, I emphasise this because some of the former members, even government cabinet ministers of the original ANC government and of the liberation struggle, have stood up and said, don't vote. This party is so corrupt. Please destroy your vote. Go in and destroy your vote. Spoil your vote. Now, we made a statement. No, you cannot do that. The way to is to get in there and participate. I think Pope Francis challenged us. You know, we were asking him about the corruption situation. How do you respond to it? Because it's a common problem throughout the world. And South Africa being a beautiful country with magnificent people, you really want, you know, the good of this country to reach all its people. We asked him, you know, what can be done here. And he asked us in return, what are you doing to train leaders in this world of politics, social involvement, civic activities? Because, you know, his part of the good story of this ANC government is that we do have civic organisations. We do have an independent electoral committee. The judges are free in South Africa. The press is totally free in South Africa. In fact, they're all the time attacking the government. And the government, well, just listens to that. So we are a free country, but it's going to take a little bit more time for the minds of our people to be freed away from the old racial categorization of life into looking at life from the point of view of human dignity, participation of the majority, equal opportunities for everyone, opportunities and openings for economic growth and development. This has still to happen. And it is happening, but it's happening very slow. But let me not forget that, you know, the business community, I think, have to be a lot more generous. South Africa is a country of huge mining interests. South Africa has generated huge profits for countries basically based overseas. And one really asks oneself, how much of the profits of companies trading in South Africa are reinvested in South Africa? You know, the beginning of our corruption debacle started with what's known as the arms deal. That is not long in the Mandela government. Overseas European countries mainly and the United States persuaded the South African government that they needed all kinds of new military equipment. Now we're looking at something like $70 billion buying submarines. Now what do we need submarines for? In South Africa, buying all sorts of bomber aircrafts and helicopters, you know. So and of course these overseas European countries, I don't want to name them, this is a service going to the whole world, but you know very well who they are, these bribed South African government representatives to favour their tenders, to favour their offers. And this is really where corruption came to be seen as a profitable occupation. And in a sense, it has coloured the whole political economic awareness of life in our country since then. That's where corruption, in a sense, finds its icon, if you can use. But I do not only blame our own government officials who took bribes, I blame them, yes, but I blame even more those countries from Europe, Central and Northern Europe, and even our own country here, which bribed, which offered these bribes. Of course, that's a natural way of them doing business, but that corrupted our people very fast.